With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Blobby, oh, Mr. Blobby. It was a Christmas number one, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, come on. Killing in the name of.
Yeah, that'd have been better. Welcome to the 12 Rambles of Christmas. We are down to number three. It's the top three.
A podium finish for whoever's up now, which you've already seen again.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Well, this is, of course, our countdown of the 12 Rambles of Christmas, a daily countdown of what we see as the 12 defining topics in football since we began the Football Ramble in 2007. Mm. Oh, today is a juicy one. We talked about FIFA yesterday. We're back to proper football matters. And it, of course, is Pep Guardiola's Barcelona.
Is anyone surprised this didn't come out number one?
it was always going to be up there.
Well, we'll come on to it. His shadow, we've said this a couple of times, I guess, but his shadow over football now, based on those years at Barcelona between 2008 and 2012, is huge.
Massive.
Absolutely huge.
Would it have come this high if Manchester City weren't kicking it?
Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows?
It's a good point, actually. Yeah.
But the point is they are.
They're in there.
That's right. Well, yeah. And that is part of that legacy, because that style was implemented at Barcelona. And I think the thing with Pep Guardiola that's really worth remembering is at 20 years old, he was the pivot in the dream team who were at the time, pre him taking over at Barcelona, seen as the benchmark of what a club side could be.
Mm. Absolutely right. And you say his shadow looms large over football. There's a few little sunny spots that Mourinho's going, right, your shadow's not reached there.
Yeah.
You
know? I mean, it is cold and dark, but it's not your shadow.
I don't even cast a shadow, so don't know what the fuss is about.
Well, old Pepe G, he's from Catalonia as well, joined Barcelona in their youth setup in 1984. He played for Barcelona C and B, and of course the first team. He left the club as a player in 2001 for Brescia, having had a rather successful time as a player, winning 6 league titles, 2 Copa del Reyes, 1 European Cup, 1 Cup Winners' Cup. Always get a mention for the Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah.
You know?
Always.
Sorely
rest
missed.
In peace, yeah. That's going to be number one.
Rust in peace?
Yeah.
But he is one of their own, and he is loved by that Barcelona faithful. He was loved by them before he became a manager there. But their love went even deeper when he left as manager, of course. When he left the club, they weren't having the best of times. As a player, sorry, when he left the club, they weren't having the best of times, relatively speaking, of course. Under Louis van Gaal, always good to mention the big man, they'd won a title in 1999, but then they'd finished second, fourth and sixth.
Yeah, it's unheard of.
Odd to think of Barcelona finishing sixth in any time in recent years. Then that was under Van Gaal and a few different managers as well, I should say. And then in 2003, out of nowhere, Frank Rijkaard came along and lifted Barcelona back to where they should be. It's an incredible anomaly on Frank Lampard.
Frank Rijkaard.
That would be something.
At this point, Guardiola was sort of knocking about playing here and there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he went to Brescia, and then I think he ended up in Mexico.
Yeah, he was doing his coaching badges in Mexico. Right. He played for the club side there too.
He was in the Middle East as well for a bit. He played in the Middle East.
Right. Yeah, he did indeed, yeah. Rijkaard won 2 league titles and the Champions League his first few years as manager, and they were playing great football. Barcelona were kind of back, if you know what I mean.
His managerial career is, I mean, we're not going to talk about him, but it's one of the oddest things you'll... It's a great example of how this Barcelona DNA, in quotes, which can sound hugely pompous to anyone who's not part of it, it really does come into play with someone like Rijkaard, who had no joy at all anywhere else, really.
I sort of look at Zidane the same way and sort of go, will he go somewhere else and just absolutely flounder?
It's hard. I think there's a reasonable chance that would be the case.
Very much so. I think as well, with the Rijkaard thing, again, going back to what we were just saying about the Dream Team and Pep Guardiola side, the side between that was sort of tipped as like another one of the great club sides. That team when Ronaldinho was firing on all fronts, I think it, because of Guardiola, it's easy to forget how, you know, the height of the esteem in which that team was held.
Of course, they won the Champions League, and any team that does that deserves to be called a great team.
Absolutely right. They had Deco as well, Samuel Eto'o, of course. They were fantastic. Rijkaard's Barcelona were great to watch. They really, really were. The last couple of seasons under Rijkaard, Barcelona were playing beautiful football, but they did drop off slightly. I remember I spoke to one of the sort of the premier Spanish journalists that we know in this country about that Barcelona side. And he was talking about off the field, the players, you know, Ronaldinho is there, come on, you know, they were living it up. And I said, didn't, you know, nearly half the squad go through divorces and stuff like that? And he just went, well, it tells its own story.
Yeah.
You know, with a little sort of wink and a smile, you know, as what things were going on off the field. They'd lost out in the league to Real Madrid in Rijkaard's last couple of seasons. And there were reports that, the players' party lifestyles were beginning to take their toll on the side. And in 2008, the summer of, Rijkaard was relieved of his duties. But he did make an impact at that club. Rijkaard's, time at Barcelona needs to be mentioned when you're actually talking about Pep Guardiola and some of that kind of stuff, because he did get them back to where they should have been. And he did bring through some youngsters, such as Andres Iniesta and Lionel Messi. So Rijkaard's...
I bet Messi was tough to spot. I did discover Messi. Messi discovered Messi.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's true. That is true.
But Guardiola was managing Barcelona B for that year before he took over the first team, wasn't he? So he was already sort of firmly ensconced in the club. And as Jim mentioned at the start of this, is firmly part of the Barcelona folklore already. And before you get into him just starting to manage the first team, I remember it becoming very clear very early on that he approached coaching the same way he coached play. He approached playing.
Yeah.
Because I remember Guardiola, I'm unfortunately old enough to remember Guardiola as a player, and I remember him winning the Champions League in 94, and I remember the type of role he played. 92.
Yeah.
Remember the type of role he played for Barcelona. And this is a player who played defensive midfield. He wasn't big. Mm-hmm. He wasn't particularly strong, relatively speaking. He wasn't quick. But he was he was able to impart these instructions on the pitch. Almost be like a general in the theatre of conflict on behalf of whoever's making the decisions.
Absolutely, like a guide. What's really interesting as well is apparently at the time, Laporta's first choice was Michael Laudrup.
Yeah.
Could you imagine how different?
But another great
different
player.
How different all of football would be.
League Cup winner. So he's got trophies in the cabinet, Jim. Don't worry about that, Michael. Yeah.
Well, he got the job, of course, when Jose Mourinho didn't.
Yeah.
Pep Guardiola, which we've spoken about, you know. But Guardiola came in, immediately looked in charge and had a plan. It was a match made in heaven, it's fair to say. Ronaldinho was one of the best players to ever play for the club, but he was having a bad influence on Messi. Pep saw that he was slightly on the wane.
Can you imagine party Messi? I can't imagine. No. Well, he's on sort
of,
the town with...
hasn't he got he's tattoo Messi now because of the Neymar thing, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh,
apparently right, he was hugely influenced with Neymar personally. That's why he started getting all these tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
That was
led.
Maybe he is really easily led. So that's why it's vitally important.
Yeah.
So if he's led in a good way, look how devastating it is. But if it went the other way, my goodness.
Is there someone on the pitch going, right, just get the ball on the right wing, take it around seven players and smash it into the top
corner?
Yeah,
he's clearly remote control.
It's like when he retired from international football for like 20 minutes. Oh, just retire. All right, I will.
Unretire.
I'm back. Yeah.
Pep also got rid of Deco and started to rebuild that midfield. Mm. He promoted Sergio Busquets and Pedro from the B team, signed Dani Alves, Seydou Keita and Gerald Piqué, among others.
And around that time, he actually wanted to get rid of Samuel Eto'o as well. But Eto'o really put the work in training.
Yeah, so Eto'o proved himself.
Guardiola gave him that chance.
Yeah, and my, he proved himself.
I think it was really important for what Guardiola was trying to do that he brought not just Piqué, but Fabregas back to the club as well.
Because
I was just going to say, because you know when they went on to win the Champions League in, I'm terrible with my years, Marcus, 09, it was 09, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That they had seven of their team players who started the final were La Masia graduates, whereas I think when they did it before, they only had three that were graduates. So Guardiola's,
Fabregas wasn't part of that one.
But generally speaking, was the trend, and that's why it's important to point out, oh, you talk about, oh, he's part of the Barcelona DNA and all this other stuff. That does actually mean something.
It very much
because
does.
He bought into it himself. And finally, we talk about things like pride and passion and playing for the badge quite derisively in this country. Mm. Like, oh, it's all about passion. If we have more passion, we win more stuff. And clearly that's not true. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Pep Guardiola prides that very highly.
Oh yeah,
he backs
it up with other stuff.
Yeah, of course, but he still buys into the idea in principle that it's important that you understand what Barcelona are all about and
completely.
You have pride and passion in that.
But he wants scholars of the game. He wants scholars of the club and all that kind of stuff because Barcelona are a very big example of, you know, more than a club, Messi and
absolutely. And the perfect example of that is the trio of Xavi, Iniesta, and Cesc Fabregas, who all say that Pep Guardiola was a personal inspiration as a player, and you can see Guardiola's game in their game. And again, that's that DNA thing.
Yeah. Going back to his first season in charge, some of the big players that season, Valdes in goal, Puyol, the old warhorse, Alves, Piqué, Marquez, the Mexican.
Yeah. Rafael Marquez.
Yeah. Yeah. Abidal, Xavi Iniesta, of course, Yaya Toure, Busquets. And the front three of Messi, Eto'o and Henri was absolutely fantastic.
Do you know what I remember most about that? Do you know what I remember most about that season? Mm. Is that they lost their first game.
They did. I remember that. I remember watching it live and thinking, oh, this
but
is
Pep didn't panic.
They lost to Numancia away.
Uh-huh.
And then I think they might have drawn it after that as well. And then they went on a mental run. But they won 19 out of 20 and drew the other one. And there are about seven absolute shellackings in that run.
Yeah.
They hammered Atletico Madrid. And of course, in that season, they beat Real Madrid at 6-2. The Bernabeu 6-2.
That was just ridiculous.
That was seismic.
That was like your Man City beating Manchester United. It's slightly different, but in one of those massive results.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, seismic.
It was jaw-dropping.
And they won the league by 9 points. They beat Athletic Bilbao in the final of the Cup 4-1. And they soundly beat Manchester United in the Champions League final 2-0, which we were at, Jim, which was a real privilege.
Phenomenal.
You know? And so they did the treble in his first season. And we all remember, though, on the way to that Champions League final, Peter, the controversial win at Stamford Bridge.
Oh, it's brilliant. Tom Henning.
Hey, Didier Drogba shouting at the camera, Donaldson, you're having that.
It's one of my favourite moments.
Tom Henning of Rabo. not giving Chelsea 420 penalties in one game.
But do you know what, though? All the things that we've talked about, all the teams and whatnot that we've discussed on these 12 Rambles of Christmas, we often say, oh, the stars aligned and oh, you know, they got a bit of luck. Well, you do need a bit of luck if you're going to win a treble or something like that. And that night, Barcelona did get a bit of luck with some decisions and whatnot. They went through on away goals. Iniesta scored that last-minute beauty to take them through on away goals. But there was somehow, I think the neutral thought, it was the right team that went through.
Mm. Mm. You know, everyone loved that team.
Yeah.
Because they were the closest thing we've had to, you know, Cruyff's Ajax.
You know,
we've heard legend of teams like that, and our generation had one now.
And the treble they were able to win, mm-hmm. they won the treble in 09, didn't they? Mm. The treble they were able to win, I mean, that set the sort of template, not just for what they were going to achieve under Guardiola, but so much of football now can be sort of traced back to that era, because you know, if you think about things like the high press that everyone talks about now. I mean, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people with just a passing interest in football will know what a high press is now, purely because so many teams do it. But the first team that I remember doing it of the modern sort of, we're talking about our Ramble era, is Guardiola's Barcelona. They would famously just push and push and push so far up the pitch, and their strikers would concede more fouls than their defenders would, because they would set themselves a ridiculous task of, like, if you lose the ball, you've got to win it back within 3 seconds.
Eto was so crucial with that.
He adapted his game to be able to do that. He was a willing guy to go
in that side.
Eto
was such a crucial player, and he's often overlooked, actually. But he was, you know, one of the best forwards Barcelona have had in recent times. You know, absolutely superb. Scored the opening goal in the Champions League final as well.
Do you remember, we were sat in the stands talking about how United needed to get a hold of the game quickly or something was going to happen. And as we were saying that, Eto just, seemingly out of nowhere, just scored.
And that final, they were the two best sides in Europe that season. Manchester United were brilliant that year. And Barcelona just schooled them.
Someone had said before the game, I forget which pundit it was, it might even have been Ron Atkinson, had said that Messi
no,
didn't score.
Terry Venables,
of course, said that Messi doesn't score enough headers, and then he popped up with one.
He said, don't worry about them putting balls into the box, because Lionel Messi will never score a header even with a top hat on. And he scored a header in the second half.
How he leapt.
And you're right, I think that's right. I think I might be remembering it wrong, and apologies if I am, but I remember thinking United and Barcelona were the two best teams in Europe that season. And Barcelona, with all due respect to Manchester United, Barcelona were miles better.
And there was a sense of that the whole day in the city. Do you remember that? You know, Barcelona were louder. They were more colourful. They were more up for this. They had more faith in their team. Not that the United fans let themselves down at all. They were absolutely fantastic. But there was a sense this was Barcelona's day from the moment the tongue.
Yeah, there was
up.
A sense that this is happening and no one can stop it happening. And they didn't. And as you alluded to earlier, Luke, the final, there were six Spanish starters for Barcelona that night, four on the bench. And that was
very
another
tapas-like.
Well, this was another factor in Spain's international dominance too. Guardiola helped a lot of young talent. You know, often these things are they're interwoven, aren't they? And that was Guardiola's first season in charge of Barcelona. The most outstanding season in terms of trophy, but in terms of playing, it was to get even better. And we shall talk about that after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get
sleigh bells.
He has indeed.
He has, Luke Moore. What have you got to say?
We're counting down our top 12, of course, our most favourite 12 incidents since we started doing the show in 2007, in what we've called the 12 Rambles of Christmas. But we'd like you to get involved as well. If you email us at show@thefootballramble.com with your suggestion for your favourite or biggest moment since 2007. We will pick out our favourite and we will give them a 55-inch 4K TV courtesy of Toshiba, and we will record that show, that subject, at some point in the new year. Toshiba offers you the chance to watch every football match in 4K picture clarity. Thanks to the TV's pinpoint sharp resolution, no detail, flick or kick of the ball will ever be missed. Enjoy 24/7 access to a whole world of online content, including catch-up TV and on-demand services such as Netflix. With this TV, you can also access last week's shows on demand with Freeview Play. For an authentic audio experience, it also comes with that subwoofer to project that bass sound. Don't just hear, but feel the roar of the crowd. So for your chance to win, email him with your favourite moment from 2007 onwards. That's very important. We've had a couple that are before 2007. The Zidane headbutt doesn't count.
No.
To show@thefootballramble.com. Pete, have you got anything to help us out with there?
Dimitar Berbatov's Facebook drawings.
There we go. Mm. Don't know what that means.
He used to do drawings. He's quite a good artist.
Is he really?
Yeah, check out his Facebook. Okay. Quite good. Quite talented.
There we go.
Now he's at Kerala Blasters.
Is that where he's playing now?
It is, yeah.
Okay,
India.
Right. I bet he's tearing that off.
That's having a lovely time.
I like how some people have suggested Zidane's headbutt. Right, we switched our marks from 2007. Well, I have something from 2006 World Cup then.
Yeah. We start in 2007. What's the most famous football moment from the year before that?
Back to Pep and Barcelona. His second season in charge wasn't quite as successful, but still very, very good. That's the season they swapped Samuel Eto'o for Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
It seemed an odd move at the time, didn't it? Everybody thought it.
I was really excited by it, but I thought it was odd. Yeah,
It's fair to say they didn't get on. As stories emerged, the two's kind of approach to the game just clashed. But Guardiola's style of management and man management in particular actually became more apparent, especially even now when Ibrahimovic is still barking on about it. We see that Ibrahimovic loves to be loved. He loves to be treated like a royal. He wants special treatment and so on. Guardiola doesn't do that. He wants to treat everybody the same. He said to Ibrahimovic, Barcelona players don't turn up to training in Ferraris, which is blasphemy for Ibrahimovic. Mm. But Guardiola, that's how he approached
it. Am I being too simplistic to suggest that Guardiola thought, I've had a brilliant season here, and everything's gone right, we've won everything we can win. At some point, we are going to need a plan B. And Zlatan is the best in the world at what he does, but it's completely different to any other player we've got on the squad at the moment. Mm. So we'll have him. And Zlatan clearly isn't a plan B. And even if you tell him he's not a plan B, he's going to work it out fairly quickly if he is one.
Yep.
Hence him sitting on the bench and all that sort of stuff. And so that's basically what happened.
I think that's a bit...
Because I think there's a lot written about it, a lot said about it. And based on what they've both said in their books and stuff like that, I wonder if it's just that. It's just a case of that.
Well, quite possibly, yeah. Interesting stuff. Well, Ibrahimovic was only there for a year. Did win the league, though. I mean, Real Madrid pushed Barcelona much more in the title race. But Guardiola won the league. This is when we started to really see the tiki-taka style.
Yeah.
Spain had been kind of developing that style as well, of course, largely through the help of Barcelona players as well.
Mm. The goal I finished off at the weekend with Suarez, so much like that blueprint.
It was fantastic. Well,
it's still there, isn't it? Because that's the thing with Barcelona. Like Cruyff's, influence on the game is still there, and Guardiola has actually managed to augment and add to that. And when they're at their, when Guardiola's Barcelona were at their absolute best, that strangulation style of possession, it was like they were playing a different sport to the opposition.
It was, yeah. I think that's the best way of saying it.
That's my goal, Shane Ward, Christmas number one.
Yeah. Is that what it was?
I don't know if it was that, yeah, but I mean, just saying.
It's just your fave.
Bob the Builder, can we fix it?
Yeah.
Yes, we can, says Pep.
Do you think being knocked out by Inter hurt him, Mourinho's Inter?
I think so. it was that year. Well, Barcelona, they did win the Club World Cup, which normally doesn't mean anything, but when I saw them win that, I felt like it's right that they're actually officially crowned the best side in the world.
Well, it's absolutely, and also it's the volume of trophies. I think they won six, didn't they, in their first year? They won everything they were in.
Yeah, exactly.
And at that point, it becomes just about collecting as many as you can, surely. Yeah. So they all mean something, because I think this Barcelona team, after that first season, was so aware that they were building a legacy and they wanted to keep it going.
Yeah, they only lost one league game that season, 2-1 away to Atleti. They beat Real Madrid twice, showing their dominance again over their bitter rivals and so on. But you're right, Luke. They should have been the first side to win back-to-back Champions Leagues. But Mourinho's Inter spoiled the party.
And didn't they just? But that was the whole plan the whole time.
We saw them that season. We saw them in the group stage.
Beat Inter.
Yeah.
2-0. But there we are. Wasn't to be. The third season, Pep was in charge. May not have brought a treble, but this, I think, was perhaps the most impressive in terms of the football they played. He shuffled the pack a little bit. He brought in David Villa and Javier Mascherano. He let go of, most notably, of Thierry Henry, Yaya Touré. And, of course, Ibrahimovic had been out on loan.
He was also very dismissive around that time of Dmitry Chigrinsky.
Yeah.
They signed for big money, and he realised that this guy is a defender, but he's not going to take on board my ideas. I need to get rid.
And it doesn't matter how much he paid.
Without being cynical, it's quite nice to have the luxury of being able to pay that amount of money for a defender. Do you know what? He's not picking up my ideas. I'm getting rid of him.
Yeah. I mean,
and they ended up playing Mascherano and sometimes even Busquets there, didn't they?
Yeah, he did.
Joe Hart never had a chance.
No, he didn't. Joe Hart's not even picking up on one of my ideas.
Don't let the ball go in net, mate.
Yeah.
He's done well to get a mention in this one, hasn't he? This was Jose Mourinho's first season in charge of Real Madrid. And in the first classic of the season, Barcelona won 5-0. I mean, they were irresistible.
We were on Andy Brassel's house.
Was that one?
El Brasico, as we call it. Do you remember? Because I remember you really distinctly after the 6-2, you making a joke like when Mourinho had come in to Madrid saying, imagine if the first Clásico of the season, they just smash him again. And it seemed laughable that would even be possible because, yes, this is an incredible side, but, you know, you don't do that to Mourinho teams.
No. Well, they drew 1-1 at the Bernabeu later on in the season, which was the first time Madrid had showed a bit more resilience against Barcelona. And it was Mourinho's side that stopped Barca winning another treble when they beat them 1-0 in the Copa del Rey final. Now, Barcelona did beat Madrid in the semi-final of the Champions League. So, you know, Mourinho was sort of, relatively speaking, feeding off scraps. Well, the cup win's always a good win, of course. But in the final of the Champions League, this was when they played Manchester United against Barcelona. And they were so dominant. They won 3-1. But they were more dominant than they were in that 2-0 final.
100%.
This final was, I mean, 3-1 flattered Manchester United a little bit. I know it was a great goal from Rooney, of course. But Messi, Pedro and Villa up front were just different class.
It was their only shot on target, United's goal on that game.
Yeah, and at the time, Busquets, Iniesta and Xavi, they were established as one of the best midfield combinations of all time.
To his credit, did Ferguson not just hold his hands up at that point?
You can't do anything else.
Yeah, well, Mourinho wouldn't have.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But that's Mourinho, you know. But that final put them in the history books forever. And people around the world already love this team. Their love, again, went even deeper for this side. And people looked at this side and thought, this is the way to do it. Look, I'm of the opinion, and I'm sure a lot of other people are, there's no right or wrong way. You know, there's many ways to skin a cat.
Absolutely.
But there was something about this side that some people did believe, but a lot of people, maybe even myself included, thought, that's the way to do it. If there is a right way, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think the preoccupation of managers and players, I maintain, should be winning games. Mm-hmm. As a fan, I think we have our right to choose what we want to look for in our football.
Yeah.
And I think you could certainly argue that, given that sport is always improving, pretty much without exception, there's a decent argument to say that it's never been played better than it was played in that season by Barcelona.
It's almost the kind of logical pinnacle of purism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean by that. Yeah, I think that's fair.
And a great example of that would be, well, Guardiola had at his disposal what we would probably suggest in terms of effectiveness would be the greatest dribbler of all time in Lionel Messi in his team. Yet his team is known for passing.
Yeah.
So it's not as though they're known for just give the ball to Messi. They're known for their passing style. Yet they had the greatest dribbler of all time.
I mean, that midfield, they were bastards for a through ball, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just ridiculous. Pete, I remember when we went to see Barcelona play at the Nou Camp against Inter. And you, having watched Newcastle for a lot of your life, God bless you, you came away wide-eyed and you were like, how do they thread the ball through those gaps?
Yeah, I didn't know you could keep it on the floor.
Well, this really is where, again, we're talking about the Ramble era. This is where we were sort of, we've now been fully seduced, I think, even watching the Premier League, which was never technically as good as Spain and one or two other leagues. Pretty much every player at the top level in England, their touch is automatic. You very rarely, even a big long ball, you very rarely see a player miscontrol it.
Yeah.
And this team we're talking about there in that season under Guardiola, their touches were automatic.
Yeah.
It was almost like watching a computer game. They were always going to get the ball under control. They were always going to pass the ball to the right foot into the right gap. And as you say, thread it through a tiny little small space.
All players in that side were comfortable on the ball, including the keeper.
Yeah.
You know, the Pep Barcelona way became the way to play the game. You even see that now and it's good that it's happened, but you even see now with amateur players or Sunday morning players, to an extent, of course, in this country, that people actually, there is an acknowledgement now of just hoofing it up the park is completely uncultured and just not the right way. And I'm saying that the influence, you know, you talked about Pep Guardiola's shadow. that shadow even reaches the far corners of like Sunday morning league. Okay, look, Sunday morning and all that kind of stuff, and Saturday morning football, it's still
best intentions and all that, though.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, and sometimes you just have to work with what you've got, of course. But it was a joy to watch that Barcelona side. Nobody could ever begrudge them that. In his last season at Barcelona, the team's dominance came to an end. Mourinho and Madrid finally won La Liga again with a record points tally, but it took a record points tally to beat them. But fair play to Mourinho and Madrid there. They were beaten, incredibly, by Roberto Di Matteo's Chelsea in the semi-final of the Champions League, which was a real anomaly. But they did finish the season with the Copa del Rey, but they were still one of the best sides in Europe, playing great stuff. And Guardiola's reign had come to an end, but he'd taken that club to a different level and left as the most successful coach in their history. And now look what he's doing at Manchester City. And we're being dazzled, and it's almost like England and the English press are going, oh, no, 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 he is pretty good. He is actually pretty good.
It took him a long while to get on board and to accept a sort of urbane, intelligent... I think there will be an aspect of certain elements of the press in this country will be threatened, whether they realise it or not, by a guy who speaks several languages, can dress well, is pretty handsome, is successful, doesn't really owe them a damn thing. Mm-hmm. And
has a philosophy.
Yeah, and they'll be...
Cheers, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're actually talking about Roy Hodgson.
In fact, Pete, you're probably best to talk about this than me. Just talk about some of your own experiences. But yeah, so I do think it will take them a while. They've got form in treating that profile of manager in terms of how they carry themselves. Andre Villas-Boas would be another good example of it.
He was a bit prickly. Well, I suppose with Guardiola,
but he was hardly welcomed with open arms. And Guardiola's been very prickly in the past. But the most important thing on this is that I think in the 10 years we've been doing the show, you would argue, when we've talked about Spain and we've talked a bit about Mourinho, this is the club team, more than any other club team, that's influence is still being felt today. And he left there 5 years ago, soon to be 6 years ago, and he's still being felt today.
This is so evocative of like kind of, I look back on this period of the Football Ramble, I think, as we always had to go to Spain. We had Kay Murray on the website doing some videos about Real Madrid.
And that's
Real
why, right?
TV.
And that's why.
Because we just wanted more and more Spain. But now it's just de rigueur that Barcelona are an incredible passing team, and they will be for a long time.
Completely. One of, if not the best club side in the history of football. So there we are. Thanks for listening to number 3 of our 12 Rambles of Christmas, a daily countdown of what we see as the 12 divining topics in football since we began the ramble back in 2007.
Yeah, get your suggestions in for your favourite show at thefootballramble.com. I forgot our email address there. Show at thefootballramble.com, and we will unveil our winner, who will win a TV from Toshiba and have their own show recorded on Christmas Eve for number 1. There's only 2 left. Strap yourselves in. We're getting serious.
Oh, hey, come on. Say goodbye, Jim.
Vamos.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Vamanos.
Say goodbye, Petey.
Forza.
Au revoir.
Mucho rapido.
It's Christmas!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.